Can an open lawn and some free music create a community with more resilience? You're listening to SDPB's In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Since 2019, more than 600,000 people have planted lawn chairs and unrolled blankets on the expansive green lawn in front of the Levitt Shell in the heart of Sioux Falls. They gather to listen to music in a community space. Today, Levitt at the Falls offers 50 free concerts a season, and this year they have expanded their indoor programming space to accommodate programming year-round. Sharon Yazowski is president and CEO of the Levitt Family Foundation. Nancy Halverson is president and CEO of Levitt at the Falls. They sat down with me in SDPB Sioux Falls studios right across from the Levitt for this conversation. You'll hear Sharon Yazowski first.
Music is the universal language. We hear that said often because it's absolutely true. Music allows people to connect with one another in a way that just dialogue in and of itself or even other art forms don't quite open up that opportunity for connection the way music does. When you have the rhythms, the harmonies, the movement of music and the freedom that that creates within one's own being, we see this on the Levitt lawn all the time. People get together and dance, and there's a connection that happens because everyone's enjoying the experience together. We see conga lines happening on Levitt lawns all the time. And when you think about a conga line, you are actually in someone's personal space. And that would be unimaginable in other environments or if music wasn't playing. So music is really a way for people to connect, to see each other, to hear each other, to acknowledge our shared humanity through music. It's a very powerful vehicle for social connection.
Yeah. It's an economic driver. It's a social connection, a moment. It's community building. And there's a lot of research that supports that, that you've been involved in as well. It's not just, we think this is a nice idea. There are studies that can quantify what's going on.
Oh, absolutely. It's the Levitt Foundation. We've been doing research for a number of years using Levitt venues and concert sites as case studies to show the community level outcomes of bringing together people intentionally through programs, through music programs. So when you bring people in an open lawn setting and you create a space that's conducive to social interaction, such as an open lawn setting, activating it through music, that creates both social bonding and social bridging. So social bonding is when you come to the concert with your friends, your family, and you end up having a great time with those people who are already part of your circle, and that strengthens your relationships. But even more important is that social bridging, where you end up talking to the family that's on a lawn blanket next to you or in lawn chairs next to you, whose paths you might not cross otherwise in your day-to-day life, but you're having that social connection. You're seeing your fellow community members as neighbors. And then our data shows, and we've been collecting data many years in this regard, our data shows that those interactions, those small interactions add up and create greater social connectivity beyond the concert site. And that creates community trust, and that trust then leads to community resiliency. So when you think about when a community might experience trauma, whether that's through a natural disaster, whether that's through a human-made disaster, people need to rely on each other to get through that difficult time. If you're already conditioned to see your other community neighbors as community members as neighbors, you're more inclined to not only help, but to receive that help if you're in need of it. So these investments that are made to create community connection, it's not just to have a good time. That's part of it, of course, and that joy is a basic need as well. So that's an important element of this activity of bringing people together through music. But the ripple effect to strengthen the social fabric of your community that builds social capital, builds social resiliency, it builds community trust, and it also creates economic vitality. Social impact and economic impact are intricately connected.
Nancy, case study, Levitt at the Falls. One of the things as she was talking, Sharon, there, I was thinking of when things were first getting built, oh, you know, I work right across the street, essentially, from, I could just sit outside my office and listen to the music. Wouldn't that be nice? Mm-hmm. And then now that it's open, you're like, well, no, I can't sit across the street. I'm like, you want to go over there.
You want to come be a part of the community, right?
It just pulls you in. It's so much more than that. But as a case study, I love it. The Falls Water Summer Ways, you've seen this in action.
Well, the economics, for sure. I mean, we talk about the economic impact. Just in the 1 mile radius of the lawn, $600 million of investment have happened in real estate.
Wow.
That's incredible. You know, when Sharon first visited, this was a brownfield.
Yeah.
And what has happened here has been incredible. And it has basically revitalized this whole end of our community. And we're seeing more and more investment now with Jacobson Plaza and now what's happening with the moving of the penitentiary, the new Bezos grant going in for the quarry. All of this is happening, I like to say, because music started here, right? So when we talk about the power of the arts, this is definitely a great case study.
What's new at the Levitt this year?
Oh, because gosh, so many things are new.
You haven't driven by. You haven't seen it yet.
Yes, it is beautiful. So I'll go back and talk about the why. So a couple of years ago, our board met for a strategic planning session and really talked about all of the growth in our programming. So yes, we do the 50 free concerts. That is the basis of where all of this started. But we realized, especially during the pandemic, that outreach needed to be a part of what we were doing. And then we realized, gosh, you know, we want to be accessible to all people. Let's work with our friends at SDPB and let's do live streaming. Well, then that went gangbusters. So our board basically said, you know, you're doing so much. We need to give you some more space. We need to create more capacity for your team on the site. So we have added 7,000 square feet. Some of that is functional, storage, a new dressing room, a new green room for the artists. But on the west side, the Phillips Avenue side, we've added a 4,000 square foot programming space in partnership with Dakota State University and the Sweetman family to basically allow ourselves to have some year-round programming space. And our offices will be on site, which will be grand for us. But the programming space is really the catalyst. We are developing deep partnerships with the South Dakota Symphony, with the Fellowship Jazz Center, with the National Music Museum, with the Augustana School of Music. And we will be programming that space, again, to create access to the arts.
Sharon, tell us about the Levitt family, and particularly this idea of wanting to see impact in the next 20 years. This is a new thing in philanthropy that I had not heard of, but basically planting those seeds so that they grow now and then stepping out of the way.
Mm-hmm. So the Levitt family, it's a beautiful story. Mortimer Levitt was the son of Eastern European immigrants. He grew up in Brooklyn. His father was a street vendor on Coney Island, and he would accompany his dad as he would vend on the streets. But he didn't have the means to participate in all the offerings, the rides, the shows, the games of Coney Island, of Luna Park. And that stuck with him. He actually had to drop out of high school to help support his family. And he found he had a knack for retail. So he entered retail, and long story short, he ended up opening the Custom Shop, which was men's custom clothing at affordable prices. He opened the first store in the 1930s, and it was an innovative idea at the time to have affordable custom-made clothing. And how he made that happen is you had to order a certain number of shirts. You had to order at least 4 shirts, and then he would outsource the tailoring to women seamstresses in other neighborhoods in Brooklyn. So it was really an innovative concept at the time, and Saks Fifth Avenue wanted to buy him out shortly after the business grew, and he said absolutely not. He ended up growing the custom shop to a national retail chain of over 80 stores by the time he sold the company in the 1990s. So all that to say, he came from humble beginnings and really built his wealth through his own tenacity and talent. They lived in Manhattan, Mortimer and his wife Mimi and his children Liz and Peter. They had a summer home in Westport, Connecticut. In the early 70s, the community said, we need an outdoor band shell. We're tired of going into the city for entertainment in the summer. So the Levitt family ended up being the largest private contributor to this campaign for an outdoor band shell, and the town named the venue Levitt Pavilion. Unbeknownst to the Levitt family, they were sitting there at the opening ceremony, and they announced, welcome to the Levitt Pavilion. Mimi shared that story with me when she was about 96, and she still had tears in her eyes. She was so touched that the town named it Levitt Pavilion. That modest band shell evolved over the years into the program that we know today that Levitt at the Falls presents, which is the 40 to 50 free concerts, all music genres, all high caliber entertainment, and all free. When Mortimer sold the custom shop in the late 90s, he put the proceeds of the sale into the Family Foundation to replicate this Westport model of free concerts, free community concerts, an open lawn setting to replicate that model across the country. He passed the baton to his daughter, Liz, who was living in Los Angeles at the time, and she led the way for more venues across the country. And then I came in 20 years ago to really scale the program nationally. I was the first foundation staff member and got to work closely with Liz. I did not have the opportunity to meet Mortimer. He died a couple years before I came on board, but got to know Mimi as well. And so the Levitt family is incredibly generous and knows the power of the arts to strengthen communities, and they decided to dedicate their wealth to bringing free music to communities across the country for social and economic impact. So really extraordinary family when you think about how they decided to give back and focus their wealth in this lane of building community through music. Yeah. In terms of a spend down, so there's a movement in philanthropy which is about sunsetting your foundation, spending down your funds so they can do good in the community now. Most foundations are set up for perpetuity, which means you have a principal of funds and you essentially give away the interest or the return on those funds. And you let the you let that corpus grow over time. So what might have been $100 million a few decades ago might be $1 billion philanthropic organization today. So there's a concept to that, that if you hold on to the money over time, you'll be able to give more to the community. There's also a movement, which is a spend down movement, which is why keep $200 million in the bank today when you can invest that in the community, knowing that grants and supporting community efforts makes a difference in a community. And then that has a ripple effect of investment. And we as the Levitt Foundation, we decided to become a spend down foundation because we were saying no to more communities than we were saying yes to in terms of number of grant applications, in terms of number of communities that were interested in presenting the Levitt program. They were seeing the impact here in Sioux Falls and in other communities that we funded. And they said, we want that for our community too. And we were in the mindset of, well, we have to hold on to our principal, can only give away this much. But at the same time, we're saying this program has incredible impact, social impact, economic impact. It strengthens a community's resiliency. We're building social capital, which leads to economic opportunity. But yet we were holding back our own investments, and we were feeling that tension. We also had existing venues that we were supporting who would come to us and ask for gifts for their capital campaign. Mm-hmm. And we would have to say no because we were holding on to this pot of money so we could make interest on it and only give away the return on our investment. And we started thinking, well, that doesn't really make sense either. If we have an existing grantee that's doing incredible work in their community, why aren't we supporting them at a higher level? Mm-hmm. But we realized in order to fund more communities, in order to support our existing grantees at higher levels, we had to give away more. Mm-hmm. And then we educated ourselves about the spend down movement and how you can be intentional with your giving over a certain amount of time, spark change. And then what we see is when we come in with a grant, it's really catalytic and the community starts investing in itself in a way it wouldn't have had we not planted that initial seed. And then we as a funder, in addition to giving cash grants, we provide a range of resources and in-kind support. So every grantee that receives a grant from Levitt Foundation, they not only receive the money, they receive the support, knowledge, expertise, peer learning to be successful so they can leverage that grant for significant impact.
Sharon Yazowski is president and CEO of the Levitt Family Foundation. Nancy Halverson is president and CEO of Levitt at the Falls. And that's our conversation for today. I hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.